Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'd like to welcome to the program today Colin Cottrell. He joins us by telephone from St. Louis, Missouri. Welcome to the program, Colin.
Thank you, Vic. It's very nice to be on air with you.
Colin, you're a long way from home. What are you doing in St. Louis?
I could say that I was passing through on my way to Graceland, but actually I had to stop off in St. Louis to be one of the guests of honors at the this year's BoucherCon.
And what is BoucherCon?
BoucherCon is a national mystery writers festival that happens every year in different cities, and they select two local writers to be guests of honor and two overseas writers, and I was blessed and honored this year to be one of the overseas writers.
And by overseas, we're talking about over a number of seas.
We're over several seas, yeah. it's a 14-hour journey to get back.
And where is it that you live?
I live in Thailand, just on the Gulf of Siam, about halfway down the country in the south.
How on earth did you end up there?
I'd lived in the cities in Bangkok and in Chiang Mai for many years. And my wife and I decided that it would be a good idea to get away from all of the smog. And a friend of ours was related to somebody from this distant village on the coast. And we went down to visit, and we both loved it and decided that there's no reason why we shouldn't stay there. And so we've been there for the last 5 years now.
Your new novel is called Killed at the Whim of a Hat. And as I was reading it, I thought, okay, I understand where he got the title. And it wasn't until I got a little ways further in that I thought, oh, wait a minute. He got the title from one of our great leaders.
All of the titles, the title of the book and all of the chapter titles come from non-perverted, non-changed quotations from Mr. W. Bush, who was one of my favorites as far as American presidents went.
You start the book off with a famous quote from a speech he apparently made in Wisconsin where he says, quote, "Families is where our nation finds hope, where wings take dream," end quote. You don't have to go too far to find good quotes from him, do you?
I actually found a lot on the BBC. The BBC have a collection of them, and I didn't realize that the British were so enamored with the vocal skills of your ex-president, but There are a lot of websites that have the wisdoms of Mr. Bush.
I'm ashamed to say that this is the first of your books that I've read. I understand you've written a series of books featuring someone named Dr. Siri.
That's correct, yes.
Can you tell us about that series?
The books are set in the mid-1970s in Laos. The country is, you would know the country as Laos, but in fact the Lao people call it Lao. And it was the time when the communists had just taken over the country, the royalists had fled overseas, and it was a very difficult time for people just to get through day to day. And so it looked at the situation of a coroner, a doctor who was one of the communists who came into Vientiane, who had been a surgeon all of his life and was convinced by the authorities that he should become the national coroner. And so we see the city and the situation through his eyes as an elderly doctor who would love to be retired but wasn't allowed to.
I know you've written a number of books in that series. Is it ongoing? Is it still continuing?
It is. A few people have come up to me at this conference and told me that they were worried that they thought that the doctor was going to be killed off because I started the new series. But I'm afraid I get too many threatening letters from people over 60 telling me that it's probably not a wise thing for me to do to get rid of the doctor. So he's back in an eighth book, which has just been written, and I'm just doing some research now for the ninth. So as long as I can keep him alive, the series will continue.
So this new book, Killed at the Whim of a Hat, is this the first book in a new series?
That's correct. So the new series is set where I moved to, the place that I'm living now. I wanted to write something that was different just to see whether or not I could do it. And so I changed the point of view, I changed the timing, and I changed the voice. And so I now have a new series which is told through from the point of view of a 35-year-old Thai journalist woman who moved down to my location with her family and took over a resort which nobody goes to, and the life that they live down in the southern provinces.
So they've moved south just like you did.
Exactly like me, and from the city that we moved from, and encountering the same kind of problems that we encountered when we first got there.
And she is a former journalist or an aspiring journalist?
She was an established journalist at the Chiang Mai Mail newspaper, and she was next in line to be the head of the crime desk, which for a woman in Thailand was almost unthinkable. And her mother, who is suffering from some kind of dementia, bought this resort in the south, and because of the filial responsibilities, the family had to move down with her.
And Jim, your central character, she's got a very interesting family. You mentioned her mother. She also has her grandfather and a couple of siblings.
That's true. What I wanted to do was actually turn a lot of Thai stereotypes on their heads. And you're used to stories about the beautiful young transvestite who has a boyfriend and they get married and he pays for a sex change operation. But I wonder what would happen to that beautiful 25-year-old transvestite 20 years later. And so I wanted the sister to be an ex-beauty queen transvestite. The grandfather is the only policeman in the police force who didn't accept a bribe. And so he gets to the end of his career never being promoted from the from his very low level of traffic policeman because his friends didn't trust him. You can't be a non-corrupt policeman in Thailand. And then Jim's brother is Arnie, who is a weightlifter. But he's a very gentle, very soft-spoken weightlifter. So he looks very tough, but he's very easily broken. And that family, all of those, apart from Sissy, the sister, moved down to the south to try to support their mother. And to eventually they do find some very deeply hidden crimes. And Jim, her career is launched again because she's able to actually start writing for the newspapers again.
So those are cultural stereotypes in Thailand.
But the stereotype would be the corrupt policeman, the beautiful transvestite, the dumb, uneducated woman working in prostitution, and all of those, the characters that you always get in the Bangkok noir novels, that the crime novels set in the seedy side of the country. You don't actually get to see anybody outside of that group.
I see. And where does Ed the Grassman fit in with those stereotypes?
Ed the Grassman is actually our grassman. He's the man who comes to cut my grass once a month, and he is the love interest in these books. Actually, Ed the Grassman in reality is married, and I haven't told his wife that he's the love interest in in the story. She knows that he's in the book, but she's not going to likely to get around to reading it. And Ed actually is a very, very capable man who has many different skills. He can build houses. He can sail. But the characters only see him in the first book as Ed the Grassman. He develops as the series develops.
Colin Cottrell joins us. His new novel is Killed at the Whim of a Hat, and it's the first in a series featuring Jim Jury. And Jim is the main character, but there's another character who's very important here, and he's a cop, and he's another odd character, Lieutenant Champu.
Champu, yes. Champu is, I'm lucky because I'm living in a place where a lot of these characters actually exist or existed, and I don't have to make them up. It's unheard of for a policeman a gay policeman to act out his gayness, to be openly feminine. But there was one policeman who was stationed at our local police station who was very gay, who would wave gaily at people as he rode his motorcycle back and forth. Excuse me, through town, and he eventually left the police force. There are a lot of gay policemen, but they have to act very straight in order to get promotion. And our gay policeman was always a private in our local police force.
And you have a little, apparently tongue-in-cheek disclaimer in your acknowledgments that at that police station there are absolutely no homosexuals.
I had to do that. I was visited by the police because I'd interviewed a couple of policemen, and one of them told me the story about their gay policeman in the police station. And then I met one of the policemen afterwards, and I said that the book is written now, and thank you very much for the information. And he came to visit me in the evening out of uniform and said, look, I might have told you a few things that I don't want to be on record. And so the disclaimer at the end that there were no gay policemen in our local police force was really for my safety and his benefit.
That's very cute. This is a murder mystery, but there are really a couple of murder mysteries sort of intertwined, aren't there?
There are. There's one very old, recently uncovered murder mystery where two people are found buried in an old Volkswagen combi van, and they had been there for some 30 years. And so Jim starts the process of investigating how these people could possibly be buried so deep in a complete combi van. And then another mystery is the killing of a local abbot in the temple, who was brutally killed, and there's absolutely no evidence and no suspicious characters in or around the temple. So Jim has two, suddenly goes from nothing to two ongoing criminal cases, and is delighted that she now has something to write about.
And I had to wonder, which came first in your mind? Was it the murder of the abbot or the George Bush quote?
I always start my books with the title of the book. Unless I have a title, I can't write anything. And so that opening title, the title of the book, was with me for a long time before I even had the series. Not only had this particular book, but I wanted to find... I find it's a sort of a puzzle for me that if I have an interesting title, then the book becomes... Putting the book together becomes solving of the how can I turn this title into a book. And it makes it far more interesting for me.
I'm wondering about your accent. Where are you from originally?
I was born in Wimbledon, which when I was born was just outside London, but London got huge and ate Wimbledon, so now I'm a Londoner. But I moved to Australia after college and lived, and now I have citizenship in both places.
And how did you become a writer?
By accident, really. I've always been a cartoonist illustrator. And I remember there was one period when I couldn't get anything bought by the magazines. I couldn't get anything printed. And so one of the magazines said, well, why don't you write something and illustrate it so that we have something to put in the magazine? And I would write a story and illustrate it and send it to the magazine, and they liked it. And that became my modus operandi, that I would write a story and illustrate it and send it to a magazine. But unfortunately, we got to a point where the magazines liked the stories but didn't like the illustrations, and they got somebody else to illustrate the stories. So I ended up just being a writer, and I was making more money from writing than I was from illustrating.
I have never been to that part of the world, and reading this book was so foreign to me to read about Thailand, and it sounds like Thailand is a country that's in just tremendous flux and transition.
The places I first went to Thailand in 75, I was there, and it's changed so much and become so modern and so Western. Yet when you leave the cities, you don't have to travel very far to be in the countryside. So you're stepping from one period into another period in the space of 50 miles or 60 miles. When I lived in Chiang Mai, you could be in the heart of the city with pollution and coffee shops, and ride your bicycle just beyond the mountains, and there were no concrete buildings. It was just wood huts and people working in the fields. So the country is still, the rich are very rich, and they're in the cities, and the poor are still poor and in the countryside.
Have you ever written a book before where the main character was a different sex than you?
No, this is my first attempt.
What was that like for you, to get into her head?
Well, it was interesting because I traveled down with my wife, and so my wife is not the stereotypical Thai woman. She's educated, she's been overseas, and so she saw the countryside perhaps more from the point of view of a foreigner living in a different environment. She wasn't used to being in the country. And so a lot of the conversations, a lot of the material that I had was listening to her, talking to her friends, and her interaction with the locals. And so I didn't go at this blind. If I hadn't had my wife with me, it would have been more difficult for me to do it. But she actually gave me the stimulus to create Jim. Jim turned out to be different completely from my wife. Her personality was completely different. But the changing of location was very much my wife's experience.
Jim is a very odd bird. She's very peculiar. We really get to like her a lot, but it takes a while to figure out what she's about.
She's confused, I think. I mean, she didn't. The last thing she wanted to do was to live in the Thai countryside. She was a city girl. She was born in the city, and she was brought up with a lot of Western culture around her. So she hates being in a place that other people would find heavenly. I love where I live. It's just so natural and peaceful. But Jim had a career, and she was confused as to why suddenly the family should force her to be down there in the South. And she's a very honest person. So when she sees something she doesn't like, she talks about it, which is also an un-Thai characteristic. And so Jim is voicing probably the frustration of all the family, and she's the only one who's prepared to do it. And so she's a tough woman. She's very intelligent, and she's enjoying the fact that now there are crimes that she can report on.
I think if I had to pick a favorite character in this story, it would have to be one who very slowly moves into the story, and that is the retired cop, the guy who wouldn't take the bribe, Granddad Ja.
Mm-hmm. A lot of you'd be surprised how many people like Granddad Ja, and I'm wondering whether it's the hangover from people who enjoyed the series and wanted a 70-something-year-old character in the book, just needed it as a security blanket. I like him as well because, as you say, he's slowly unfolding, that he's seen as a peripheral character right at the beginning until you realize just how much there is hidden deep down in his abilities. And in the second book, in fact, he comes even more to the fore, and you see even more just how skillful he is. And I like to actually give elderly people more credit than other writers. I like them to have a role in the books, not to be the crippled grandfather who walks around complaining about things, but to have another dimension. And I think Granddad Ja is that part of me that really appreciates just how much the elderly have to offer.
Well, they've been there. He likes to sit out and just watch, doesn't he?
Yes, observe. His pastime is to watch the traffic go past, but you know that something else much deeper is going on in his mind. He's seeing things and he's learning things.
You also have what I think is probably another cultural stereotype, and that's a very powerful family, and a very influential family. They own a lot of property.
That's right. The Southern Thais are very content with what they have. They don't have an ambition to be rich and to own houses. So when the Chinese community moved into Thailand, you found that a lot of them were business people, and they took advantage of the local resources, what was available. I found that most of the really successful families in Thailand from the north to the south are Chinese origin families who their relatives came 100 years ago or 50 years ago or recently, and they took advantage of the fact that the Thais weren't raping the countryside and using all of their natural resources. So the very wealthy, very influential Chinese families still own a great deal of the land and still control most of the market, most of the import-export. Most of the politicians come from Chinese families. It's a very Chinese-influenced society.
We also have a lot of modern technology here. There's a digital camera, which we won't talk about. And then there's also this transsexual character, Sissy, is a computer whiz.
That's right.
And that's a very important part of the story, isn't it?
Sissy's sort of the connector between rural life and the rest of the world, because she's a computer expert, and she's also a computer criminal, so she hacks very cleverly. She has contacts in all parts of the world, and Jim is able to use Sissy as her communications network. And so Sissy didn't leave. She didn't come down south with the family because she wanted to stay with her computer in her condominium and not be seen in public. And so her world actually existed inside the World Wide Web, and the computer was her portal to that new life that she was living.
My guest is Colin Cottrell. His book is Killed at the Whim of a Hat. It's the first in a forthcoming series featuring Jim Jarree, and they're set in southern Thailand. his other series. He's written a number of books featuring Dr. Siri. I'm wondering, where is your readership for that series, Dr. Siri? Do you have a lot more readers in certain countries than others? I'm guessing you have your books out in various languages.
Well, Siri actually was born in North America. So it was first published by Soho in New York. And that was quite a long time ago. So it through word of mouth, I think probably the readership in North America is much higher than anywhere else. The fan base is sort of somewhere between 40 and 60. And that also occurred when the Quirkus in the UK published the series. That also started slowly, and the fan base, I think, is roughly the same age. It's now published in, I think, 7 languages.
Well, I've got to give you credit. I read a lot of mysteries, and sometimes I can figure this stuff out. But when we get to the point where we figure out how these poor individuals got in that Volkswagen van buried underground and what happened to this abbot, I just thought, how did he ever come up with this? I would have never imagined anything like this.
There's nothing more frustrating than being a third of the way into the book and already knowing who did it and how they did it. So I like to leave it until the very last minute, and the more bizarre, the better.
Are there any models for you? Are there any writers that you admire that you read, say, years ago?
I read very little. I didn't come from a reading background. My family, there were no books at my house when I was growing up. It wasn't that kind of an environment. So I didn't do a lot of reading when I was young. And I don't, even now, I read perhaps one book from one writer. I don't actually love anybody in particular. I enjoy certain books, but I don't have an idol. I don't have anybody that I try to emulate. And I think some people have said that the fact that I'm innocent as a reader makes me different as a writer, because I'm not modeling myself on anybody else. And that sort of leaves me as a different writer, a unique kind of a writer.
You're there in St. Louis as an honored guest at BoucherCon. What kind of things are you doing there? What kind of events and festivities are going on around you?
Well, they do get their money's worth because they fly me. Val McDermott and I are the overseas guests, and they flew us out here, and they want to get their money's worth. So you're on panels. I've been on 3 panels already, and I have 2 more to go discussing different aspects of writing. They have dinners and cocktail receptions. A lot of chances. It's for the fans, really. So there are a lot of opportunities for the fans to talk to people that they only knew as a writer on paper, and to come and take photographs and get an autograph and just chat about where you came from and what you're doing. So it's like a bridging process for the fans to see that the writers are just real people like them, and that, you know, we have lives just like they have. And I think the fans are so, a lot of new people have come this year, evidently, but there's a hardcore group that come every year to meet new writers and to get new experiences.
Well, I'm guessing there's a lot of pent-up demand for you to sign books. If you're living in Thailand, I don't imagine you probably get out on book tour that much.
Yeah, I've got my right hand's in a sling at the moment. even when I'm walking along, it's like watching the West Wing. You know, you're right walking along signing books as you go from one hall to the other. So I've done probably more signing this last 3 days than I have in the last year.
Well, how fun.
It is fun. For me, the fun is I don't get to hang out with writers very much. You know, I live in a place where there's me and there's the fishing community. And so my contact with the writing world is usually online. And it's not the same as sitting down in a coffee shop with somebody and finding out, you know, how they write and what habits they have and how frustrating it is to have an agent. And it's nice because I can actually ask the questions directly that people ask me to find out how other people react and how other people cope with being a writer.
This other murder, this Abbot Wanai murder, this seems to me to be the ultimate collision between the old ways and the new, between the cyber world and the world of peaceful contemplation. Was that intentional on your part?
It was very much so. I see it through tourism, just general basic tourism, how foreigners coming into the country with one point of view to stay for a week in a rural area and stay with a family, how that taints and damages the culture that they're coming to visit. And that's on a small level, but through the internet I can see that the world is changing in that there is no countryside anymore, because even if you live in a very rural area like me, you can still get on the internet. I can still contact through the cell phone towers. I can still get quite a good internet connection. And so you go to a village that 20 years ago there was no road and the people wouldn't know very much about what was happening in the world, but the kids now would have iPhones and you'd ask them a question, they'd look up the map on the telephone. And so it's selfish of me to want to go back to that old period when people were naive and things were simple. But it's also a shame that everything's becoming the same. Everywhere is now becoming another concrete jungle, an extension of Bangkok or an extension of Phuket. And that's why I'm living in a place that is completely rural. But I know that it won't be very long before the cities come and eat me.
So you have a high-speed connection out there?
It's not high speed. I mean, it's good for me because I'm a low speed kind of an IT person, so I don't need to be too developed. But there aren't that many great connections in the States. Traveling around the country, I haven't actually been impressed with the speed of the internet connection. So I don't actually rate my connection at home very much below what's available here.
Mm. Colin Cottrell has been our guest. His new novel is Killed at the Whim of a Hat. He joined us by telephone from St. Louis. This book just came out in hardcover. Is there another book of yours that's just come out in paperback? I don't know that. Do you have
I don't know here. I know it overseas, but there are a couple of books that should be coming out in the next couple of months. The number 8 in the Dr. Siri series should be out in November. I've just finished writing the second in the Jim series, which is called Grandad, There's a Head on the Beach. But that won't be out until next year sometime. The paperback one is probably the one that you have. I don't know any others.
Grandad does what on the
There's
beach?
There's a head on the beach.
No. Oh, good.
I was really pleased that the publisher allowed me to keep that title.
Well, we'll look for that one. Well, we really appreciate your time today.
It's been fun. I've enjoyed it.
Our guest has been Colin Cottrell. His book, Killed at the Whim of a Hat. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis. Thanks for listening. Next week in the Book Nook, Julie Clam returns. We had her on the program last year for You Had Me at Woof, How Dogs Taught Me the Secrets of Happiness. Her new book is in that same dog-loving vein. It's called Love at First Bark, How Saving a Dog Can Sometimes Help You Save Yourself. Julie Clam is back in the Book Nook next week, right here on WYSO, your public radio station for the Miami Valley. The Book Nook is recorded at Soundspace in Yellow Springs and engineered by Chris Hertzler.